Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Darren, that Rey Mysterio match challenging Gunther for the Intercontinental title was exactly what I expected formatically, dramatically. I didn't think it would last so long, and I didn't think they would make it so credible lasting that long. This felt like a big deal, the way that they hyped it, with promos before from Rey and Gunther that were on brand for each of them, playing into Gunther's character, playing into Rey's backstory. They hyped it well throughout the event. I love them rolling their suitcases into the ring, or not into the ring, into the building on split screen. That's very, you know, UFC, boxing, NBA-like, where you show the athletes arriving at the building. This is one of SmackDown's strengths, one of WWE's strengths, is getting the most out of a match that, frankly, a month or 2 months ago would not have seemed like a match that could seem this important or be credible lasting nearly 20 minutes. So, yes, Gunther dominated most of the match, but Rey's comebacks were believable. They were really smart. But in the end, Gunther won decisively, but I think Rey gained, not lost, by losing. So there's my take on the main event of SmackDown. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. Excellent match. I thought both of them showcased both of their strengths very well. Both of them were presented very well. The match built up very effectively. Obviously, the size difference didn't, you know, as you said, was not, you know, a big credibility factor. Rey fighting from underneath, doing what he does best. And it's so good they got him out of that tag team with his son. He just seems rejuvenated. It was such a good move for him to come to SmackDown. And Gunther looks like somebody that they're really preparing for big things for. He's main eventing, presented as a big star, bodes very well for both of them. Rey was kind of on the back burner in that tag team, but now he's something you could heat up and do something with now. I know eventually he'll probably go back to the feud with his son, but, I mean, they might have second thoughts about that now because, I mean, I think it would be a step down to have him feuding with his son. There's so much potential. He has so much left in the tank, as he proved tonight.
Yeah, Rey is fantastic. You know, I talk a lot about, off and on over the years, about how every wrestler should look at Jerry Lawler, not only for just brilliant promos that he did in Memphis and the AWA and USWA, among other places, but also how he got so much out of the least amount possible. Like everything he did in the ring, and he wasn't a, you know, great athlete. He wasn't a Ricochet type athlete by any means. But he threw good punches. He sold well. But he told really strong stories with the ring psychology and every little movement, every body twitch, facial expression, reaction to things that happened meant something. And in like completely different, but also exactly the same way, Rey should be studied. Rey is like 100 times the athlete that Jerry Lawler was, maybe a billion times the athlete Jerry Lawler was in his prime. But sure. Rey now is not what he was in his prime athletically, but he is so smart. He's so psychologically sound, and he's found a way to make all those little things that the real craftsmen of the ring do, not the ones who think, oh, I'm going to do a dive and get a pop from the crowd, but the ones who are like, how can I tell a story and pull the crowd in emotionally? And the detail work of what you do in between moves and how long you sell. I mean, this stuff Sammy Guevara should be studying, basically. Somebody who's super talented, you know, but less disciplined in that way and going for the sugar rush of a crowd pop with high spots and not really long-term selling and posturing for the crowd, all the stuff I give Sammy a hard time about. Rey is somebody should be studying. Like, and then Gunther. I mean, just what an effective, just brawling, brutal big man. He's just so good at not just having key moves. I mean, that big boot at the end, the chop, but it's the selling for Rey in a way that makes sense because of the timing, and he absorbs the blow, he sells it, but he also recovers. I love the little touch at the end when he was set up for the 619 and he glanced behind him to check on Ray. And that, in retrospect, was he was not as hurt as he needed to be for Ray to pull the move off, but he knew he was sending the signal, and maybe this was just trying to make the spot work, but it worked in terms of the story of the match, which is, let me see where Ray is and when I need to get up and stop playing possum so I can nail him with a boot and then finish it off. So, yeah, just lots of good things. I'm not saying it's match of the year. I'm not saying it's like Sheamus Gunther, but it's a match that, one, the crowd was into, and I think if people didn't see it, they got on DVR, you should watch it. It's really a really sound match, and I think it's still fun to watch, even knowing the outcome and knowing how long it lasted. It was, you know, there's just a craftsmanship to it. But I think, like, wrestlers should study it, too. Like, young wrestlers should look at, the, depending on what body type they are, more Gunther, more Ray. But, you know, really have an appreciation for the detail work.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the, besides the Sheamus matches, this is another example of them giving Gunther the spotlight and him stepping up to the plate to show what he can do. And I think he's come through with flying colors. I thought he might perhaps lose a bit of his aura when he lost weight and lost some of that size, but he hasn't lost a step. He's just as effective at this more fit size. Got such good presence and like that big boot, the timing, his timing is great as well. I mean, it wasn't like Ray was carrying him in that match. He did his part of the match too. Yeah, it was, I think he'll be getting more opportunities coming up because every time they give him the ball, he comes through and scores. So yeah, I think we'll be seeing a lot more from him. He's one of the people that have benefited most from Triple H taking over, and I'm glad they gave him the opportunity.
Yeah, I am too. I talked about building up the match, you know, and the way that they did it. I also want, and I talked about the wrestlers. So there's some good things about this match. Another good thing about this match that I haven't brought up is the commentary. I thought Michael Cole did a great job here. You know, some people tune out announcers or just don't want to appreciate how good Michael Cole has become. But when he's just calling a match and he knows the characters inside and out, he knows Ray's history. He's, you know, called the Gunther matches on the main roster. He knows the story that needs to be told. His voice hits the crescendos at the right time, and he pushes a limit of over-dramatizing things that might otherwise be more conventional. He pushes a limit, but he doesn't cross it. He has a good instinct now to know how to add excitement to the match without losing credibility by seeming like he's just overselling something that's more pedestrian or, you know, predictable and not looking like a fool or a sap or trying to con the viewers into thinking something is exciting when he's not. I thought this was a showcase for Michael Cole at his best too. Barrett is, you know, been, I think, really solid on commentary too, you know, playing a little bit into the LA Knight stuff. You know, he has little things that he does, but Barrett added to this match too on commentary.
Yeah. Cole, you know, I've been one of his biggest detractors ever since, you know, he was damaged from his ill-advised heel turn years ago.
Yeah.
Yes, right. It's just cringe just thinking about it. But yeah, he's come a long way and some of the shackles are off, you know, after the Vince era. So yeah, he's really good. And I remember a couple of years ago, I think it was either the UK tournament or a cruiserweight tournament that he did. And he was so effective in that. When you give him the chance, and he's still a work in progress because, you know, sometimes he was saying, I forgot what we talked about on the last time I was on here. He said some silly phrase or something. So he still has his moments when he's in the big matches like this and there's drama and everything. He's really good at that part of it. So yeah, I will reluctantly give him his props. So if he can win me over, you know, he's doing good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's pause and introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get on to calls. I'm predicting ahead of time here this would be a shorter show than usual, in part because I don't want to spend a ton of time previewing Crown Jewel. One, because I did a lot of that with Zach Haydorn on yesterday's Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship. Also did in-depth preview with Rich Fan earlier in the week for VIP members and also Todd Martin on The Fix. But there's just not going to be time by the time we produce this and drop it on our feed for people to listen to it, especially in the United States, before Crown Jewel takes place tomorrow around noon, depending on your time zone. So we won't do a ton of Crown Jewel hype and stuff. So predicting a shorter show than usual, but I do want to hit on the things on SmackDown that they did that are worth evaluating in terms of hyping Crown Jewel. And also the other things they did to fill in the show to have the undercurrent of other things that aren't Crown Jewel related advance and fill TV time creatively. So all that coming up along with some calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, November 4th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, the website pwtorch.com. And I also host a bunch of podcasts that I just mentioned, including this one, the post shows following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. You can find the live stream at wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to the live link. You can get the direct link to that night's show at pwtorch.com, our main news and results website. And just go to my TV report on Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, the Keller Report. And at the top and bottom, you'll find a link to the live stream. So we invite you to join us. You can listen to part or all of the show right about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. And that also includes the email address if you want to email us your questions or comments on the show. And it also includes the phone number to call if that's a better way to listen in. And you, of course, also can participate. You can also find all that information I just mentioned on our Twitter account until Elon Musk crashes Twitter into the ground and it blows up and it's gone. And then we have to spend another 10 years trying to build up something that is cool, but still, you know, Twitter wasn't perfect, but man, it's not going to take long, I think, for Elon to screw this thing up and go broke in the process and screw up his investors. But that's a whole other story. But man, what a fiasco it's already been. Advertisers pulling out left and right and him trolling people. It's been amusing, but I'm also feel like they're taking away something I enjoy or putting something at risk that I enjoy. So we'll see. But for now, you can follow us on Twitter at PWTorch and look for all that information right around the time Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end each week. Darren, how do you feel about Elon Musk and what he's doing with Twitter?
You don't want to get me started.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going down. At this point, it'll be down by Tuesday.
I mean, or it'll break Tuesday. He cut half his staff just days before Election Tuesday. Yes. Do you think he'd want to, like, maybe wait till next week, Wednesday, to start messing around with the capacity for traffic and the people who are going to be needed to stop the disinformation and make sure? It's just, what a fiasco.
I don't think there's a business plan. I think it's just random, just doing what he wants to do, contacting trolls online and all that kind of stuff. I mean, what a business plan.
He overpaid terribly for it. And then the stock of Tesla crashed with everything going on with Tesla and the stock market, and he overpaid, and he has investors who are now demanding a return. He's got like $1 billion a year in interest payments on for his investors, and Twitter's never made $1 billion in a year.
No.
Like it's lost money more than not. So there'll be books written on it. The articles, already are fascinating.
I think he bought it as a joke, and then it backfired badly, and watching the tailspin in real time.
And there's not a good alternative at this point, That's what's kind of a bummer is just, everyone kind of, all at once has to kind of figure out if there is, I don't know if it's going to be counter-social or I don't know, just like everyone's got to kind of, or maybe some people from Twitter will put the pieces together and build something quickly.
That's a possibility as well. That's very sad about those people all losing their jobs, of course.
Yeah. And then the ones that are left are being asked to work, extra hours, 84 hours a week or something to make. It's like you don't get to cut half your staff and then ask your staff to work double the ones who didn't get cut. So
exactly. Anyway. As more workplaces are putting in more humane conditions, this guy is having people, sleeping overnight and long hours, just headed in the wrong direction that the rest of the culture is going into. It's ridiculous.
Yes. So follow us on Twitter at PWTorch. Darren, how can people follow you on Twitter for now?
I won't even promote it because you follow me on Instagram at DKLSTL.
There you go. Yep. Yes, I know. It's sad when the protest vote is for the folks at Meta, at Facebook, at Instagram.
Right.
Twitter was the good guy of big social media.
Yeah.
Can we bring Google Plus back? Is Google Plus still, can they flip a switch?
something, MySpace, anything, please.
Well, I know I saw jokes about, can we revamp MySpace? Do people still have their accounts there? Someone else said, you can just start reading newspapers again. And someone else said, people are going to get like library cards and go read books instead of scrolling on
Can you
Twitter.
Imagine?
I did a good job curating my lists on Twitter for the politics one, for articles I wanted to read, and then, humor and comedians that I liked. And It's like I really curated it, and I didn't go down rabbit holes of nonsense and trolls and negativity. It's like I think I managed to use Twitter really well.
Yes.
I didn't put as much into like building followers and making it a central part of my business as I maybe strategically should have. But now I'm sort of like, I'm kind of glad I didn't, because that's how it might be crumbling. I never wanted to be too reliant on something I didn't have ultimately, some sort of say-so over. So, the Torch, we have our own server, and, our content is stored there, and we're not, working with – you can access us on Patreon, for instance, but we're not reliant on that. If something ever happened to Patreon, we can just shift those people over to our server. But I know some people are just in that ecosystem and like it, and so, we offer that.
Right.
Anyway, what a fiasco. But it's fun to watch, but it's sad at the same time. Anyway, you can call us and talk SmackDown. It's not a long line. Right now it's a pre-tape show, and Crown Jewel's tomorrow. People are going to bed early so they can wake up and watch Crown Jewel or whatever. I don't know. But give us a call. Let's we can talk Twitter too if you want. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. If it works better for you, especially if you don't listen live, you can email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I ought to introduce the co-host of the show, the other voice you hear. That's Darren Lilly of pwtorch.com. He covers Impact Wrestling for us. Darren, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking some SmackDown.
Excellent. Yes. Normally we wait about 3 weeks sometimes, and longer, sometimes a year, between people being on. For you, it's only been 2 weeks this time, because everyone who was sort of on rotation to maybe be this week, they all had conflicts. So now like the next 3 weeks are sort of booked out with people who might have been on tonight. So we brought you on early, so we didn't make you wonder, why did 6 weeks go by?
Is another year going to go by? I appreciate it.
Yeah. By the way, check out Javier Machado's preview of Crown Jewel at pwtorch.com right before you tune in to watch Crown Jewel, either live or on delay over the weekend. And I understand many of you won't be watching Crown Jewel because it makes you sick to your stomach watching, Paul Levesque and Stephanie McMahon smile with the, Saudi royal family and stuff like that, like posing for pictures with them and all that stuff. But
present company included, I will not be watching.
Yep. I will. I mean, it's my job. I will. Yeah. I comment on it. I can protest socially outside of my professional job. But I choose to cover the content. And in part, it serves as a way for people who don't want to watch it to know what the heck is happening. So check out our coverage at pwtorch.com, either live as the show's going on or just catch up, later Saturday over the weekend. Cool. All right. So with all that said, let's begin getting to our callers. Let's begin with Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean. Talking to Sean. Talking to Sean in Tennessee.
Welcome, Sean. Your jingle, by the way, is almost twice as long as Javier's.
Yeah.
That is true. I didn't think about it. The first time I listened to it, I didn't really think about it. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, that is really long. Holy cow. Darren, Wade did not do that, Darren. It was not Wade. He did not want it. He did not think about it.
It was
Sean. Just thrown in his lap.
It was Sean.
He took it.
Come on.
Sean,
that's not
name.
True. That's what you get for being jealous of somebody's jingle, Darren. That's what happens. You get jealous, and then they're like, let's just throw it on you. Here you go.
Lesson learned.
Man. But wait, it's been a while. It's good to talk to you, man. Darren, how are you, sir? It's only been a couple weeks, I think. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know how long it's been. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. Great to talk to you.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to keep it positive on this show. I like positivity. Positivity is good. I wanted to say, well, first, Wade, again, I got to give you guys credit. You know, on the torch, you like you said earlier, you've had a lot of coverage of everything going on this week and for Crown Jewel. So I've listened to just about all of it. Not all of it. I mean, the fix is, you know, it's hard to get through sometimes, but I'm there. I'm getting through it. Let's go. Let's do this. But I'm thankful for all
is
you guys
hard
do
to
for that.
Because,
and,
Sean, is it hard to get through because you just find one of us insufferable, or like, is it, or is it just the length?
It's just, it's just the time of the day. That's all. You guys do a fantastic job. I love the heel. You know, you guys both have your heel dynamics, which I really enjoy. And I just haven't finished it yet. That's all. It's not from anything bad. It's all good. It's all good stuff. But I got to hear you and Zach talk. But I did want to bring up one thing about Crown Jewel, and I won't harp on it because I know you've already previewed it, and I get that. But I did just want to say that it is a tough situation, real quick, before I get to SmackDown with Bianca and Bayley. I just want to bring that up really fast because that is a tough dilemma I think they're in, because with Bayley, we've already talked about it, you know, over and over. She just feels kind of, you know, not where she was, obviously, before she left. And so I don't see how you can have her win after she's already lost a couple of times. I just don't think that helps the title. I don't think it helps her. It helps her because she, quote unquote, has the title, but I don't know. I just think Bianca, you know, has to retain. I just think she's on a better run right now. I think there's more things planned for her at the moment. I think Bayley eventually can get back to where she needs to be, but I just don't think now's the time. So, I mean, you could say something about that real fast, but that's just kind of what I thought about that match in particular.
Yeah, I like the idea of Belair being a long-term champ. I'm open to, if, you know, giving Bayley the title if they think that's necessary to kind of get more out of her, that if her coming up short is going to define her down so much that she lose value from someone that they really feel they need to give a title to give a boost to. I don't think it's devastating for Belair if she were to lose, but it just doesn't feel like it's Bayley's time or that she's earned it in a performance or crowd reaction standpoint to this moment. So it would be more of a strategic move, I think, to give someone in need of a boost a boost, but it might come at a price of slowing Belair's momentum. Darren, what do you think?
I would keep it with Bianca as well. I just don't see nothing against Bayley. I just don't see the upside of her taking it at this point, especially as Sean pointed out, with her kind of on a losing streak and not looking, you know, as strong against Bianca. But I would just keep it, let Bianca go into the Royal Rumble season strong and establish a big challenger, because it would mean more to beat her if she has a longer streak. So I just don't see any good reason to change it right now.
All right, Sean.
Yeah, so go back to SmackDown. You guys were right on what you were, you know, saying about, you know, Rey and Gunther. It was really good. I mean, the build up to it was really good. I like even Gunther's, you know, little small promo. You know, his small thing was good. I like the way he. I didn't almost realize. You know, you forget how articulate he really is, and to hear that just for that couple seconds was really good. I enjoyed that. I guess the only like. I mean, you guys were saying he dominated. I mean, I didn't feel that way watching it. I mean, I feel like he didn't get a lot of his stuff in that he normally does. I mean, it's fine. He won the match, and it was so good, and it was very, you know, they did have you on your heels, you know, like, oh, you know, they did a good job of playing into Rey might win, and it was fine the way it ended up. I just think Gunther maybe could have got a little more offense in, but that wasn't the story they were telling, and they didn't really, you know, it just overall, Gunther wins. But the question I was going to ask you, like, overall was, Wade, I hope at some point, like you were talking about with AEW, that you'll do your, you know, babyface heel dynamic of a lot of the wrestlers, because I don't know where Gunther, like, is going to go from here. Like, there's really not a lot of people for him to face at this point. And I wanted you to think of maybe talk about some options he might have after this, where he might go, because it just seems kind of low right now at this point.
Like, what's next for Gunther?
Yeah.
John, yeah, yeah. Someone on Twitter, speaking of, mentioned this, and I think it was on PW Torch, not – oh, did I not retweet it? I thought I retweeted it. Maybe it was on my feed. I switched to my feed here. Bear with me while I do this. Yeah, yeah. So this is Fainy Fine on Twitter. He says, Wade, as I watched Mysterio going for the IC title on SmackDown, I know I can't be the only one thinking the Bloodline versus Imperium, the Tribal Chief versus a Ring General, and Gunther versus Roman. They all seem like natural, spectacular matchups. Darren, what do you think of that?
Only problem with that is that they're both heel factions. I'd like to see it, but mm-hmm. And maybe the Bloodline is headed that way to being baby faces. If so, then that's a natural. The way I was thinking is that eventually you're going to see Gunther against Brock at WrestleMania. You could build that up and make just a fantastic fresh match and not have Brock against Roman Reigns for the 80th time.
Oh,
but
gosh.
I would love to see that.
Lord.
Yeah, don't even bring that to
Brock,
world,
I think
Darren,
that's a match people would love to see.
What, Sean?
I just told Darren, I was like, please don't bring this into the world. Please don't even bring that thought into the world.
Yeah,
like,
right?
We don't need, we never need Brock Roman ever again. Please, never
no.
again.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, my hope all along with Gunther was that they would keep him strong enough so that a match between Gunther and Roman or Gunther and Brock would really mean something. And I think they have. And I would, you mm-hmm. know, tonight, I mean, okay, it took him 18, 19 minutes to beat Ray, but, you know, he beat him decisively, and they told a great story with Ray to make it credible. I don't think anyone walks away from that going, oh, now, you know, yeah, Gunther's going to be Ray, but he's, you know, it's like, you know, when a sports team barely beats a team below 500, you think, well, they're not going to be good against, you know, the dominant team in the league. But that's not always true. Sometimes the below 500 team rises to the occasion, or it's a style matchup. And, yeah, I mean, I think Gunther's body language, his promos, you know, the articulateness, matter-of-fact confidence that he has, the supreme confidence, is it's going to carry over. And I think people will pay to see. They will highly anticipate Gunther against either Roman or Brock. And I think, I mean, Roman, from a legacy of WWE standpoint, is a big deal because anybody who's built up to be a threat to Roman is going to be, you know, historically significant. But Brock against Gunther is just one of those, oh my God, we're seeing this type moments, you know, and where, I just think fans will just be standing when the bell rings for that. If WWE doesn't mess it up and they continue to do what they've been doing with Gunther and treating him as something special.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be good. I mean, yeah, Gunther Brock, oh man, that would be awesome. I would love to see them do that. And at a WrestleMania would be great too. And, of course, you know, Gunther, I think, would have to win just because, you know, again, it's Brock. And at a WrestleMania match, he's lost enough where it's not going to – I mean, if you keep Brock strong now until – like, even though I don't want Bobby to lose, I think Brock's going to win just because I think there's still more with Brock. And if you want to have a Brock-Gunther match, I think you have to keep Brock strong until that point. I just think you have to, if that, even if it hurts Bobby in the short term. I just think you got to go there. And so I – Gunther's doing a great. I like him a lot. You know, the more I see him in WWE, I think there's obviously a bright future for him, and I'm excited to see where he goes. And kind of going back to the opening match of the show with Liv and Sonya in the, you know, the no disqualification match, I just kept watching that match, thinking I know Sonya's been. I mean, she's lost so many times. She's been lower down on the card so badly. But I went through that match. I wanted Sonya to win. This Liv character, I just don't know where they're going with it. I just don't know where they're going with it. She's has a mean streak now. Okay, like, where do you go with that? Like, she's still a baby face. And it's like, I just don't know where they're going. And Sonya had so much upside.
Yeah.
And then she got with Adam Pearce, and now she loses all the time. Like, what did you guys think watching that match? Did you want Sonya to win? Because I definitely did. I knew it wasn't going to happen, but I did want her to win.
When the fans are chanting, "We want tables," and Liv went to ringside, and she makes this big production of it, and she's got this exaggerated facial expression, and then she does her body gyrations like she's about to get on a stage on some sort of other kind of show, and you know, just shaking her stuff like, "Hey, guys, look at me." It's so just patronizing and I don't know. I don't want to be too, like, hard on her, but it's like she's in a match trying to titillate the guys in the crowd. She does it in her ring entrance. Like, she shakes her chest when she walks out, like, hey, everybody, look at me. Oh, did I do that? And it's just like, come on, you're an athlete, and they're promoting you as having an edge, and she's just out there smiling and goofing off before she gets to the table. And you know, like, and I just don't think people should admire somebody who can't stay focused enough on the match, but it's like, hey, everybody, you're chanting for tables. Look what I'm about to do. I'm going to reach under here, and I'm going to get a table for you and you and you and you, and maybe we'll meet after the show, and you can fantasize about it. It's just like, settle down and fight. Your gimmick is you're a fighter. My grandma was on a game show, like, in the 1950s, and she had a chance to win money. And it was this is when game shows were live. And in the middle of the game show, when she was given the question with a timer, she started saying hello to all her kids on live TV. And she lost. She didn't have time to answer the question because she's like, hi, oh, hi. She named all the kids' names. And everyone watching at home was like, no, you know, no, to answer the question. Don't say hi to us. And that's what Liv is doing. She's like, hey, everybody, look at me. Okay, so that's one spot in this match. But and the ring entrance too. But yes, I find her character obnoxious and so easy to root against. I know there's people who are Liv Morgan fans and they have their reasons, but I do not get. You know, Michael Cole's like, people didn't think she could be extreme, but she is extreme. Yeah, we get it. You're driving that home, but why and why should we care? And is that a good fit for her? She's like pretty consistently, and I'm not rooting against her succeeding, but her current character is, I think, among the worst in wrestling. The way she plays it is obnoxious, and I think counterproductive. And frankly, I mean, she's been through so many different incarnations. It's like, how many chances is she going to get to find something that fits? And I just think everything they've tried has not worked, but they keep trying. But this, I think, I don't know. This is one of the worst stuff. And so, Darren, I'll throw to you after that. That evisceration.
First of all, fantastic story about your grandmother. Do you know what show it was?
I don't remember the name of the game show. I mean, I think it's long ago defunct. It was, you know, it might have even been like a local game show here in Minnesota, you know, like a daytime thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was like, I don't think you're going to see it on Game Show Network, but.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that was tremendous. But with all it said about Liv, I still think that she's better off than her championship reign where she was totally miscast. Yes, a lot of this stuff is forced with the over, you know, the mannerisms and the smiling every time she, you know, goes through a table, which is kind of ridiculous. They could tone that down a bit. I still think it's better than having her as champion. I mean, that doesn't make it good by any means, but I think we're getting closer to if they could fine-tune some of the silliness of it and going over the top, but of course that's what they do, is go over the top. I think that she could settle into her role as an upper mid-card gatekeeper role better than fans. And she still had her fan support in that match. I don't think it was like, you know, that the show tonight was taped. But she still has that support. But if they fine-tune some of that stuff, I think that she could get on the right track, but we're not there yet.
All right, Sean, we're back to you. Darren, I think, I mean, better off. Yeah, I mean, I agree with your assessment, but I think it still comes across like they're just trying to find something for her. And so in a sense, it's just like, you know, it just feels heavy-handed and sort of desperate, like, let's try this. And after a while, even if it's better, it's still bad.
And I think the reason they keep trying, because there is something there. This ain't it, but there's something there to get,
I don't know.
Get the most out of her.
I don't.
And it is a work in progress.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Wade.
Sean, what else?
Yep. There. They're not against you. I just don't see much there. I'm sorry. I don't. I mean, as a wrestler, she's gotten better. I mean, I'm not denying that. But I just, character-wise, she's just, there's nothing, I don't know, there's nothing to really sink your teeth into at all. And she's been around for a long time. They have not really told you anything other than, you know, the underdog babyface there at first. But what did you guys think about I really didn't understand. I mean, MVP came out after Braun beat up the jobbers or whatever, and then MVP's talking stuff. You know, like, I know it's Braun, and people want Braun to beat up people, and they're building into the match with Braun and Omos, and I get it. I'm not looking forward to that match at all. Braun just win in 2 minutes and be it over with. I just, ugh. But, I mean, I just don't understand why Braun's beating up MVP. Like, why? Like, you're a babyface. Why are you beating up MVP? He did nothing to – I mean, yeah, he talked trash to you. You're Braun Strowman. You're above that. Like, I don't know. Like, what'd you think about that real quick?
It made me think my prediction of MVP being the one who loses at Crown Jewel might happen. because we've been sitting here thinking, how can – you know, will they really sacrifice Omos to Braun, or will they really sacrifice Braun to Omos? And I think MVP's going to be mad about what happened on SmackDown. And he's going to go, I want to get my hands on you. Let's make this two-on-one, you coward, you schmuck, you whatever insult he calls. And Braun's going to be like, all right, I'll take on both of you. And he's going to pin MVP. That's their escape hatch. So tonight in the angle they did, and I hadn't read spoilers, made me think more that that's, you know, more likely to happen. I'm not saying I'm still putting my money on it because it's such a cheap finish. It's such a cheap out if they do it. But I wouldn't put it past them to do it. And this angle, it does, as you said, Sean, it doesn't make sense that the babyface just brutally beat up a manager who just, you know, it acted like he normally acts with some, you know, just, you know, mic work. And it felt a little out of proportion, even if, you know, the fans are doing it and Cole's cheering him on. What do you think, Darren?
Yeah. You seem to think they want to protect Omos. I think he's just going to get run over and beaten. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen, because I think they brought Strowman in to be their giant. So I don't see the reason to keep in both of them. What purpose that serves, unless maybe they're going to team them up, which I don't see the point of that. I thought the reason MVP might have got beaten up was an injury angle, because I don't have any information, but maybe he's not making the trip, because this is a good way to excuse why he wouldn't be there. That's it. Mm-hmm.
I think the problem with if Braun just plows through Omos is, what do you do with Omos then? Like, I mean, he's been chopped down. Like, he's not good enough on the mic. He's not good enough in the ring to be credible. All he has is the mystique of his size. And if Braun, you know, who's won some and lost some as a main eventer, if he just plows through Omos, it's just like, well, you're just basically cutting bait. You're just saying, okay, we don't have any serious plans for him. Because what's the point of seeing Omos if he's been chopped down decisively by Braun? I'm not advocating against it. I mean, maybe they ought to just go, we tried, but, you know, that was Vince's experiment. Now we built up Braun. We're going to use this to get Braun momentum, and Omos will – I mean, Omos can always turn babyface and be the giant who comes to the aid of a babyface who MVP is, you know, being – too mean to, and that's how you rehab him. You know, maybe ultimately he's the smiling Andre the Giant baby, the babyface version of Andre the Giant, who stands next to and under, you know, teams with Rey Mysterio against the mean brawling brutes. You know, something like that. And if that's the plan, then being plowed over by Braun doesn't really matter in the end.
Right, but you could always send him to NXT to get him some seasoning, because that he badly needs before coming up to the main roster. That would be a good move if they still see potential in him, because he badly needs it from just what I've seen of him in the ring. And again, that might be something worth saving. Yeah. I mean, not that anybody wants to see him in long matches on NXT, but that's kind of what it's for. It is development. So you don't even necessarily need to have him on TV, just little appearances and just have him back in the training. But he does need that seasoning. Absolutely. So I could see them doing that.
I'm not confident seasoning is going to make him better. I mean, some people are tall but not athletically fit to be, coherent pro wrestlers. And, you know, I don't know that investing more in that and taking him off TV is going to lead to him being markedly better later. I mean, he would be better, but I just don't know if he's ever going to be good enough. Where it's like, oh, if we just invest a little more in him, then he'll be good. I think if you invest a little more in him, he'll be better, but still not good. Anyway, Sean, back to you. What else is on your mind?
I guess the last thing. And Wade, I know you have your pet peeves, and I know I've talked about it once, but That's the one thing about Omos I can't stand either, and it's not his fault, but, like, they have to have the camera low pointed up at him. I hate that. I hate that. I know he's 7'3". I don't need a camera at the lower part of on the floor, like, looking up at him. Jeez. Anyway, so
you're not
Logan,
wrong.
The video pack. No, I know. It's so bad. But Logan Paul Roman, the video package, I thought it was – I mean, of course, it was a good video package. I mean, WWE does great video packages to try to prop up these big matches or so-called big matches. So I thought it was good in that sense. You know, Logan saying I've been doubting my whole life, and I'm like, oh, you're trying, dude. You're trying way too hard. I don't think a lot of people are buying it. I'm not really buying it. If you've had 30 million followers for a long time on YouTube, you know, people have known about you for a while. You know, they're doing the one lucky punch thing, which is, you know, like we've all kind of talked about. I think it's good enough to say, hey, he's got a quote unquote fighting chance of beating Roman, even though we know he's not. So, you know, what did you guys think of the video package? What do you guys think? You know, just going back quickly to the match, you know, tomorrow, like, do you think it's going to be the super drawn out, super long match, and, you know, he hits, you know, Roman just kind of dominates for a while, and then that's where the punch comes in, and like, oh, there's a chance, oh, you know, or is it like a 10-minute match, and, you know, Logan gets his couple crazy spots in, and he went, you know, what do you think they'll do with the match? What do you think of the video package? Do you think it did enough to think, oh, we're really behind Logan Paul, which we're probably not, and that's pretty much really all I had. I'm going to go back and check out some of the matches. I'm not going to watch everything because I'm not a fan of these shows either. I wish they wouldn't do them, but that's what they're going to do, unfortunately. Wade, again, I appreciate all your coverage of all the big events, all the stuff there, and I appreciate talking to you, and thank you for taking my call, as always.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Sean. Darren, I'll get your thoughts on the match and the video package because I've just talked so much about it this week, and I don't think people will listen before the match happens probably. So I just throw to you for your thoughts. I mean, the video package was a good recap of the story they've told.
Yeah, and I had those same thoughts. I mean, their production is always on point, and they did a really good job of telling you the story. I'm not particularly interested in it whatsoever because of one of the participants, but they did very as well as they could do. I think the match itself will be very good, and I'm estimating it would go maybe 10 to 15 minutes just because it is a WWE main event, and they're going to give you at least 10 minutes. I'm guessing that they've talked about this punch so much that I think he's going to deliver it at some point, and of course Roman will either kick out or put his foot on the ropes or whatever to give Logan Paul a little something there, but I mean, I don't think the ending is in doubt, and if they have Logan Paul win, that's ridiculous, but I'm just seeing it as like a 10-minute little match.
Yeah, yep. All right, if you're just joining us, you can call. The number is 347-215-8558, and when you call, push 1 on your keypad to be on the show. That'll flag you on our switchboard, and then we can bring you on. You can also call that number and just listen in. And you can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We will go next to Don in St. Louis. Don, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. Your thoughts on SmackDown tonight? Good, good. Good to talk to you.
I felt it was a good SmackDown. It didn't really seem tape in a way. I don't know how you elaborate that. But also, what do you think about the Bray Wyatt stuff tonight? And what do you think about his appearance tomorrow? You think it's going to be more of the same or a greater reveal?
Yeah, Darren, what'd you make of Bray standing in the back saying that it just seems like he's on the edge of insanity.
Right.
And he's doing everything he can to white-knuckle his way through not flipping out and snapping. And, you know, the worker in the back yelling at him and then going, you ever have someone cut you off in traffic and you just fantasize what you would do to them if you could just be one-on-one with them? And it's like, okay, maybe, but not to the degree that you do, apparently. This is a little much. And, I don't know what they have planned for him. I have absolutely no idea. And if I guessed now and you asked me in 3 hours, my guess might be different. I mean, I think it's wide open. I mean, I really think it's wide open right now where they're going to go with him. But they're going to do something, and I think they want to do something of significance at Crown Jewel. You know, Tony Khan and AEW likes debuts on pay-per-views. So someone showing up who hasn't been on a show before. WWE likes to have their pay-per-views be PLEs, be newsworthy and buzz generating, so that if you didn't have Peacock, you didn't watch it, you missed a little bit of WWE history. You didn't get a chance to see it play out live. So I think it's going to be significant, but I don't know if it's establishing his first feud or just showing up with really cool special effects or what. I don't know what to expect. I'm glad I don't know ahead of time, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, definitely. I like the segment tonight. It continued the slow build, very gradual. You're seeing that darker side come out to balance out how, you know, the more personal side that he's had in previous weeks. But this week was a little bit disturbing, you know, kind of overreacting to the guy just, you know, hearing the guy yelling or whatever. So it was like, this is a little, you know, kind of overreaction. And it's kind of hinting that he might be a heel, but then again, maybe he's not. Again, they're continuing keeping you guessing, and it's a good thing. But as far as the Crown Jewel appearance, yeah, they keep hyping the interview. I don't think he's just going to come out and talk. I think maybe the little teaser, and you'll see, like, this Uncle Howdy character at least debut and, like, making come out on the stage or something like that. Maybe not any kind of physical interaction, but I think you're going to see a debut by one of the characters in this little universe.
Yeah, that would be – yeah, that would be a buzz-generating
mm-hmm. –
debut and development on this show. Don, back to you.
What do you think about LA Knight? Do you think he has a strong upside in the WWE right now? And what do you think about this World Cup idea they announced tonight? You think it's a chance for Drew to maybe get his theme back or what?
What was the last thing you said? The clarity of your call isn't great. So what was the last thing you said?
What do you think about this World Cup thing? You think there's a chance for Drew McIntyre to reestablish himself better?
They said that next week we'll get New Day. We'll get a title match against the champs. That's newsworthy. Shinsuke against Santos Escobar, and then the beginning of the SmackDown World Cup. I don't know if this is like their version of the All Atlantic title or what. I haven't thought much about it. I don't think giving Drew McIntyre like a consolation win in and of itself is going to, you know, get him back to where he was, say, in August or during the pandemic, for that matter, when he was kind of the you know, MVP of WWE for a while, along with Roman, in terms of how the performances in the ring and it just kind of being that leader on the microphone. He certainly lost that stature so far. My hunch is they would use it sort of like King of the Ring back in the day, where it's more of a way to elevate somebody else, but haven't given a lot of thought. Darren, how about you?
As far as the World Cup, I think it depends on the caliber of people that they have in it. Obviously, it looks like they're trying to go for some international flavor, so it would be perfect for someone like Drew to come in and shine, and he will need something, especially depending on how this match with Karrion Kross goes this weekend. Hopefully he will win that and his momentum could continue at the World Cup. So it could give him a little bit of momentum. Might not put him back on top of where he was, but it could push him in the right direction. You feature him for a couple of tournament matches, and then if he wins, it's a good start to getting him back up there. The other thing was LA Knight. I thought that he did well. Was this his LA Knight debut in ring? I think it was.
I think so. Yeah.
Right. I thought he did very well, carried himself well, good mannerisms in the ring. His matches, if you've seen him before, you know what you're going to get. Nothing spectacular, but it's solid. It's WWE style, and that's fine. I thought he did well. It looks like I think they got some plans for him. He's another beneficiary of the management change. But, yeah, I think he's got some upside, and I think they see it in him.
You know, Pat McAfee was a huge fan of Shinsuke Nakamura. Wade Barrett is almost equally a big fan of LA Knight. I mean, LA Knight, he is just like the greatest thing ever. It's just like, wow, it's just totally a fanboy, as Cole said.
It's good to have an advocate.
Yeah, and Barrett's just like, yeah, I am a fanboy. So, yeah, it's. I mean, and I think that's good. I mean, I think having somebody of Barrett's credibility, and I think he's got some credibility, having giving Knight that boost and going, this is the LA Knight that I saw in NXT. I'm morphing from my attempted Wade Barrett impersonation into Braun Strowman somehow, which is just weird. But yeah, he is to declare he's a fanboy for Mr. Knight, but he's, you know, touting him and saying, you know, how great he was in NXT, and he's a big fan of his. So I mean that helps. I do think LA Knight, size wise, you know, isn't, because of his ring style, he's not tall enough to get away with not being more athletic and still be a main eventer. But Ricochet was, I think, a good first opponent for him in a featured match on SmackDown. And, you know, I think that's a good role for Ricochet, too. You know, it was like about 9 minutes. It was credible. It was exciting. And I think Ricochet, not that LA Knight is like awful, but LA Knight is not dazzling. You know, it's more about his voice and his mannerisms and his cockiness than it is, you know, his high spots. But I thought it was a good debut. I don't think anybody watching that isn't thinking, this guy might have some upside to him. So I thought it was smart booking, and it, both in terms of his opponent, how long the match went. Winning by cheating, you know, shows you that, you know, a lot of people are getting a major push are just going to squash Ricochet, and the squash is overstating him, but decisively win clean over Ricochet. Like Gunther, you know, it just beats him clean, 1, 2, 3. Knight used the rope, the middle rope for leverage and a yank of the tights. So they're trying to get heel heat on him, and they don't want him to be necessarily decisively better than Ricochet. So I think he ultimately is going to be, you know, an upper mid-carder or mid-carder, but valuable because he radiates something that most wrestlers don't. That's my take on that. Don, any follow-up?
Yes. What do you think about the tag team situation? I feel like we're in a weird place right now because I feel like the Usos are going to keep on dominating. You feel like a team like the Viking Raiders, who have been making, like, noise, is going to stop them, or you think somebody else, like, down the road? Maybe Kevin Owens and Sammy, or Sammy and Solo?
Yeah, I don't think the Viking Raiders are going to, and I actually think the video is just to introduce Sarah Logan and Ivar. With Ivar as a singles wrestler, we'll see where that goes. But yeah, I think that the Usos are going to retain, and I think New Day will lose, and I think the Usos will set the record, and then it is time for a new babyface tag team to take them on. But I don't think it's going to be Sammy and Solo immediately. So I don't know, Darren. Anyone come to mind as a good opponent for the Usos coming out of going into Survivor Series and kind of going towards the Royal Rumble season?
Nobody really stands out, but I think what they could do is team up two singles wrestlers who aren't really doing anything. Maybe that's where you put in your Braun Strowman and Omos or something like that. But nobody's really standing out.
They could continue the Brawling Brutes. Yeah, they could continue the Brawling Brutes feud for a while.
Yeah.
You know, have the Usos win, but somehow then have New Day win, but then have the Brutes earn a shot again and stretch that out.
I suppose.
I don't know who Nakamura would team with. You can do, you know.
Is his partner come back yet? Rick Boogs? Maybe he's ready?
I think he's a ways out. If he was ready, they could do that. You can do Madcap, Moss, and Ricochet. yeah. I mean, there's just not a lot of options. I mean, it is a
no.
But I bet they've got something in mind. The Usos are important enough, you know, they ought to. But unfortunately, we might just be in for a series of New Day matches until we get to whatever the next stage is. We'll see. But they are also on Raw. So I mean, I'm kind of limiting my thoughts to the SmackDown roster. But because they hold both belts, you know, you got to introduce the tag teams on Raw into the mix. Unfortunately.
Yeah,
that's
not
real
either,
right? I mean, yeah. You know, Gable and Otis aren't in a position to be credible. They aren't doing Ziggler and Roode anymore. They're not. Dominic and Ray aren't a team anymore. Montez is out injured. Orton's out injured. So yeah, they're going to have to piece together a babyface team, and well, we'll see. I mean, that's their job, not mine. But yeah, Don, nothing is jumping out. Don, I appreciate the call.
All right, thank you.
Yep, you bet. All right, let's go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
have a question based on the stipulation they made during the Roman Reigns Logan Paul match. Is it possible the Paul brothers might be the ones that beat the Usos for the tag team titles at WrestleMania, and it's not Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, is what a lot of the websites are saying?
Yeah, I mean, the Sami KO thing was definitely high on the radar. It was on the radar and a top choice until the Sami storyline with the Bloodline really took off and they wanted to stretch it out. And I don't know that, I mean, they took KO off TV just to delay what they're going to do with him because they didn't want KO and Sami to team up and have Sami break up with Bloodline too soon. I don't know that they're going to do Sami and KO against the Usos anytime soon, because I think they really want to stretch out Sami being with Bloodline. But KO with someone else might make sense. I don't know who else.
Maybe
sense.
Riddle or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that might be as good as anything. I mean, Anderson and Gallows doesn't excite me, but they're... You know, allegedly a babyface team, so
yeah,
they could do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think we're getting. Oh, and I don't think the Paul brothers. I don't think Jake's gonna do pro wrestling. They did it for people who didn't see. They announced he'd be at Crown Jewel in the quarter of Logan. And by the way, if Logan wants to know why he's booed, it's because of how you were sitting on that couch. Oh. That's why you're booed. That was the douche. Douchiest position that anybody who has ever been on television has sat in who wants to be liked. I was just like, he's on the leather couch leaning sideways. It's like, you're on camera, sit up or lay back, but don't do this weird in-between thing while you're having this fake serious talk with your brother. It's just very douchey.
It was anyway. So annoying trying to be cool. I'm like, oh man.
Exactly. Yes. What else, Ryan?
Question on this Sarah Logan premise of been airing. Do you think Liv Morgan makes the most sense to be her first big feud since there were a tag team years back and there's some history there between the two, or do you think her first feud will be somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a good first feud. It doesn't explain, you know, it doesn't like, oh, now I know why they did what they did with Liv. But that could work. I don't see any reason not to. Nothing else jumps out as like more needed unless, I mean, I would think if they are serious about pushing Sarah Logan as a heel, that she would get plow through Liv Morgan to get to one of the, you know, key babyface champions, which if it's Bianca Belair, you know, maybe that's a way to feed Bianca a fresh opponent. There?
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, maybe not the initial feud, but that's something you could build up to because there's a good backstory there and some history that you could play upon. And yeah, that would be a nice feud that they could sink their teeth into. Have to edit Ruby out of some of the footage, I guess, but yeah.
Yep. All right. What else, Ryan?
I have a question. It's something you said just a little bit ago on your podcast, how you're sick of seeing Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. Being an AWA fan, did you ever get sick and tired of seeing Nick Bockwinkel and Vern Gagne, or did that stay a little bit more frustrating than Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns?
You know what? The first live wrestling match I attended was Vern Gagne's retirement. So he came out of retirement a couple times, but he's never portrayed as a world champion level guy again. And so I didn't get sick of it because I only saw it once.
Okay.
Does that disappoint you? Was that a gotcha question, Ryan? I mean, if I was like 5 years older, maybe I'd have been sick of it. But I mean, I know people who were older than me who got sick of Vern Gagne on top. They thought he was on top too long. But yeah, I mean, I didn't have that problem. Vern, when I started watching wrestling, he was a world champion in my territory, the AWA, and Nick Bockwinkel was amazing. Bobby Heenan, his manager, was as good a performer in pro wrestling as anybody ever. So yeah, I did not get a chance to get sick of that at all.
I guess it was like me growing up watching the AWA. It wasn't that I saw that match live or anything on TV. It's just when they did like those clips from like 20 years ago, it was like they acted like that was the big rivalry back then. And maybe you got sick and tired of just watching those clips of seeing Bockwinkel and Ganya over and over again, you know, down memory lane.
I think it was a I think it was a pretty epic. I thought it was an epic feud with the two top people in that territory, and they, you know, separated and did their own thing often enough that, you know, I don't think they kept going back to it. Anything else, Red?
I'm getting to the Wilkes-Barre show, and I've never attended Monday Night Raw, so I don't know if you ever had a correspondent that's never been to a Raw that would that's given feedback to you before.
Yes, we have, but that would be great if you please email me, Brian, at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's the only way I can stay organized. If everybody who wants to be an on-site correspondent emails me there, people on Twitter say something, there's just no way for me to like translate that into something that I can get back to later because of the way the feeds work. So, talking to me on this show. So just drop me an email and we'll arrange for it. That'd be great.
I do want to apologize to Ryan. SmackDown was here in St. Louis, but I did not attend, and I did not jump the rail to see how heavy the announce table was. So, sorry.
That's right.
But
that's right.
They'll be back next year, I'm sure.
Ryan, you got anything else, or was that it?
Final questions on this Uncle Howdy character. Has there been any talk about bringing Barry Windham in as a manager for Bo Dallas, or do you think Barry Windham will remain retired from professional wrestling?
That'd be fun. I was just talking to Todd Martin on The Fix this week about how much I love being front row for a Barry Windham Ric Flair match in Bloomington, Minnesota during the Jim Crockett promotion era when Barry was as good as anybody in this business and Flair was as good as anybody in this business, and they just were tearing the house down anywhere they wrestled. And Barry was one of my favorite wrestlers in the late 80s. He didn't end up having a long career that you know, those of us who appreciated his work when he was younger wanted, kind of like Terry Taylor and Curt Hennig, you know, those were kind of the three big late 80s future stars of the 90s. And instead it was like Sting and Lex Luger, trying to think who else. It was just like the people who were really polished just ended up not quite having that career. Kurt had the back injury, and Terry just got, you know, defined down with the Red Rooster gimmick, and Barry just, you know, lost his focus and his interest on his career and lost his conditioning too, got out of shape. But I hadn't thought of that. I don't know how important it is for fans in 2022 and WWE drawing money and getting a new TV deal and keeping people interested to have actual family members be part of this. But and Barry was never known for his charisma or promos. He was just a lanky, athletic, really good worker, both on offense and selling. So I don't know if he'd be the right person for it, but I haven't seen him, a photo of him in a few years, and haven't. So maybe. I mean, that would be a heck of a kind of family tie-in, kind of along the lines of the bloodline if they were to do it. But, you know, you don't do it just because it's Barry. You do it because it's Barry, and he'd be good at it, and it would make sense for what they want to do. And I just don't know enough about what they ultimately want to do with the story to endorse that. Darren, any thoughts on it?
Well, Barry Windham was one of my favorites when I was growing up, so I'm biased. I hope it is him, and the mask does kind of look like him, so I've heard those rumors, and I would love to see it. But, again, the tie-in is I don't know if the audience would even know who he is and if they would necessarily resonate. It would be interesting to see. But, I mean, you can always show clips and catch people up on that aspect of it. I'd love to see it. Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, he and Rotunda were in, you know, there is WWF history. There is WrestleMania era history with them. So if they tie it together, it doesn't just feel like out of nowhere because it's like, oh, that's this guy who happened to be a family member but worked for Jim Crockett. And the Uncle Howdy thing obviously makes sense. I just, if it is that, please do it because Barry will be good at it. Don't do it because it's a family member and you can, you know, it'd be cool to have an uncle character. Just, you know, I mean, it goes to what I would say. It's like if reality adds something to it, do it, but don't do reality at the expense of something that's a total work that's markedly better. And if they have somebody better off to play that role, then play that role. But I mean, you know, it's a very logical rumor, a very logical speculation. And it's not biased to say I like him and I'd like to see that be a new chapter of his career, Darren. I mean, if you're a fan of his and he'd be effective at it, you know, that's just, I mean, if if Barry can have a career moment in the year 2022, 2023, and that's like, you know, going full circle in a way, I mean, bring it on. But again, it's got to be because he'll be good in the role. But who thought Dan Spivey would turn out to be, you know, good as Waylon Mercy? You know, I mean, there's been some transformations in this business that really, you know, Steve Kern as one of the you know, Chippendale-like, teen idol. Yeah, fabulous ones. But, you know, being kind of a teen idol and a teeny for the teeny bopper teens and so turning into the Skinner. So, I mean,
right. It
absolutely can work. You can age into a gimmick. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, Brian, bring it on if it'll be good.
All right. I was sort of disappointed. I don't know if you remember. They're supposed to do that rematch from WrestleMania 1 with Rotunda and Wyndham against Iron Sheik and Volkov, but some reason it never happened. It got disrupted, and I was a little bummed out about that.
I know. Yeah, I wanted Wyndham and Rotunda to have a much better run in the WWF. We are going way back tonight. but, hey, it's topical. It works.
Watch that on closed circuit TV. That's how old that is.
Yep. Cool, Ryan. Thanks. Always good talking to you.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing. Yeah, drop me an email, too. All right. It's time for another jingle.
Going down to Miami, talking to
Javier, are you jealous that that Sean's jingle is 19 seconds and yours is 10? It's almost twice as long.
I wasn't until now.
I can just play it twice.
We're gonna have to
I was gonna say Mike Myers is listening and he's gonna do an extended version and send it to me this week.
the director's cut.
Yes,
the remix.
Yep. The dance floor remix version.
Darren, I would joke
it's
about
gonna get it's going to get popular at the gay clubs, Javier. The dance mix version of the Javier jingle.
Oh my god. Darren, I would have joked that it's been forever since we've talked. But man, you've been on soon.
It threw you off your game.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean,
it's remix
it was, you know. Yeah, no, it did. Took a bloody. Because I'm just hearing it in my head now. See, because that's the thing. When you put things in my head, Wade, they start playing, and I lose my track. So you gotta.
You're hearing the dance club remix of Javier.
I'm actually hearing the music because I'm actually hearing the music from the Police Academy movies. You know, so that. Oh. To the with the words, so so yeah, 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 you brain sometimes not in control, but yeah, I thought it was a good show for it being taped. I mean, I honestly would not have thought it was taped because normally you get to hear the ADR, is that what it's called? I think it is. You could tell when they record something, you know, like and over that they usually do it like when they're, you know, since record it, you know, and add it to it, which obviously sounds different. I didn't really pick up too much.
I picked up some of it, but not too much of it. But there were occasions where Cole was talking and I'm like, okay, that's got a different tone to it. That was in a different different acoustical setting than ringside with a headset. It felt studio, you know, more studio sounding, but you know, no big deal.
Yeah. But it's just, it felt like lacking, which it was surprising because that meant that I guess that they, you know, they really had the show button up the way they wanted to. So that was just an interesting observation. You mentioned about Rick Boogs, by the way. Rick Boogs, his injury has a recovery time of anything from 6 months to a year, which would have put him back October this year. So, you know, technically he's ready anytime, always able. Oh. So.
Wait.
And considering when the way
did he
that,
get, oh, that's how long has he? How long has he been hurt? How many months?
WrestleMania. He was injured in WrestleMania.
Yeah. So how many months is that? So.
We would be at seventh now.
Okay. Yeah. So. Yep. Good point.
And consider the dude was walking like the next day. I think that he put on videos like right after the surgery. That which was insane. Let's talk about the Bray Wyatt thing. I really personally enjoyed the promo. Just more character building for Bray Wyatt. Just the fact that he's, you know, he's trying to be a better human being, but then little things, you know, I'm trying not to lose it. And then, you know, he gets to the guy's face and, I mean, I understand that, you know, the music is kind of like, well, you know, we're going to have a soundtrack for everything that's going on, but it does add to the segment because it adds to the actual dread of what's going on. It's like, is he going to rip this poor guy's head off? And then he's able to, you know, take himself, you know, back from the edge. It's, you know, interesting. The only thing is that the way that it's it feels, whoops, the, sorry, give me, AEW came back on. It feels like, yeah, I was watching the Shibata match. I was late to the post show. So I really dug it. I like the psychological thing of, him talking about how he has issues opening up to people and that, and he's, willing to lay himself bare. And he did start talking about how someone's screwing with him, but then the interruption kind of like derailed that. So we don't get any more further in, of what's going on there. But I liked it. I mean, it's more of a character building than for moving the story forward. But I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost bonus material. Like I wasn't expecting a big, a talking point from Bray tonight, and they gave us something. You know, it was another layer of what he's going through and how to react to his different situations going forward. You know, how do we expect him to react? What defines his character? And there's a little bit of Incredible Hulk, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry. You know, don't cut me off in traffic. Don't set me off. I'm doing everything I can to hold myself together. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. They're putting thought into it.
And the fact that, they're doing things that, when he starts talking about somebody cutting off your traffic and you flip out and you want to do something horrible to them. I mean, maybe, perhaps it's just me, but it's something I think is relatable. So it gives you like a touchstone to how he feels when, cause that's obviously, you wanted to getting angry if someone just cut you off is, and going as exaggerated as he does, someone cuts you off and you get angry and then he's going that far. So it creates an understanding of like how his anger is different from like a general, someone who doesn't deal with, not having, anger issues, essentially.
Okay, so today at Costco, this lady in her shopping cart, she had a couple kids behind her, wasn't paying attention and just sort of got in my way, swerved her cart and kind of disrupted me. And then she noticed me and she apologized. And I said, no problem. And not this exact quote, no problem, it happens. I'll probably do it 2 times before I leave Costco. And we smiled. Not every time, Javier, someone cuts you off, do you have to have these violent thoughts. We all need to calm down, people. I could have lashed out at her. I could have thrown my mega pack of Impossible Burgers or Beyond Burgers at her. Just swung it at her and made her kids cry. But I didn't. I just, didn't let it bother me.
Your restraint came in handy.
I don't relate at all.
Wade, spend a week driving in Hialeah traffic, and it will change your personality.
I'm just First of all, that's a true story. But second of all, I'm totally kidding. I mean, when I'm in a car and someone cuts me off, actually, when I'm in a car and someone just doesn't have the courtesy to use their freaking turn signal, the easiest thing in the world that you can do as a courtesy to your fellow human is flick your little finger on that thing to let people know that you plan to turn. So if you want to enter the road, you're not sitting there waiting for them to, you know, let you know that they're actually not going to pass you before you can turn onto the road. All the reasons. Use turn signals, folks. When I'm on a bike and people don't use their turn signal, it's deadly. Like, so no, but yeah, for as much as you're on the road, I could, you know, I get it. I'm just saw an opportunity to, you know, make you squirm a little bit. Like, well,
yeah.
Javier, use your turn signal, don't you? Use your turn signal, don't you?
I think my big takeaway is that Javier has road rage, and he seems so easygoing.
Oh, you don't know the real me. You do not know the real me. I literally put on a character when I'm coming on to the show. So, yeah. So,
wow.
This is not Javier. I mean, this is like, I mean, wow. Wade, one time you accused me of actually being my brother, and I'm like, you know what? It's funny because that's almost could be kind of true. It's not. I do have a brother who's been on here, but, you know. yeah. Well, so
I want to know. I didn't hear you. Did you use your turn signal, like, when you should?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I even, like, if I have to change multiple lines on the highway, I will, you know, turn on this turn signal, change lanes, and turn it off, and then turn it back on. You know, I don't even just, you know, because some people just turn on the turn signal and cross over on 8. You know,
I will do that at 3 a.m. if no one else is on the road. Like, I just don't make exceptions. I just do it. It just makes me feel better. I'm OCD. I'm a completist. I'm the last person on earth driving around looking for humans. I'll be using my turn signal.
Yeah. I mean, one of my life codes is, do unto others that you have them do unto you. So I will always, you know, I don't litter because I don't want people throwing garbage in front of my house. So I'm not going to throw garbage in front of your house. I'm like that. I mean, you know, obviously sometimes, I mean, granted, there are times when you have to swerve out of the way. In that case, like, forget about the turn signal.
Of course.
Because at that point, it's like, you know, living down here in Miami. I have no idea what I've already talked about. Bray Wyatt, there we go.
Bray Wyatt. About Bray Wyatt. What else? So yeah, what else do we want to talk about?
The other thing I found interesting, because they did this twice, and that they're basically, it was both during the LA Night and the, oh, those are my Raw notes. Hold up a second. During the LA Night and Liv Morgan. No, it wasn't Liv Morgan. Sorry, LA Night and Shayna Baszler. That they both mentioned that they talked about, like, you know, wow, these people were different in NXT, you know, and then they basically said with LA Knight, like, you know, what idiot changed his name is pretty much what Wade Barrett said. And then with Shayna Baszler, they, you know, explained that was eyebrow raising for me. And for Shayna Baszler, they said, you know, what happened to her? And, you know, they made the excuse that, you know, when you move up to the, you know, to the main roster, pretty much what they said, that, you know, you have interviews and stuff and it changes who you are. And that's, and now she's remembering who she was when she was in NXT. I found that really interesting on how they really pushed these people's histories in NXT.
Yeah, I like that. And it is interesting. I mean, it's, you know, Paul Levesque's in charge. He wants the NXT history, when convenient, when prudent, to be part of the canon of Raw and SmackDown. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't catch that, but I'm glad that they're doing that little detail work that makes all the difference. I did like that Shayna teamed up with Ronda. They make a really good on-screen pairing. I know that they're, I guess, they're friends off-screen or whatever, but and they have history. But I thought that they make a very good tandem. And there's a lot you can do storyline-wise, a lot of possibilities. You could have, like, Shayna as the gatekeeper for getting title shots, that type of thing. Down the line, you could even feud them, turn them against each other or whatever. But for now, I like Ronda having Shayna in her corner. That adds a whole aspect to her. And, you know, she could probably use the help, you know, to play off of somebody on interviews too. So,
yeah.
Good move.
Javier?
Yeah, and I like the way that Shayna was presented. They, you know, basically was similar to the matches that she had in NXT. Hopefully this is, they do the same thing with NXT, mm-hmm. they did in NXT where they stayed with her. Because it did feel like the reaction was a little bit lukewarm to what was going on in the match. But that was the same thing in NXT. It took a while of her basically dismantling her opponents before people really said, oh, she's a badass. And I hope they keep on doing that. And I think it also has to do with the fact that, like, Natalya has been essentially a heel for a while now. So it was kind of like, you know, a heel getting destroyed by another heel. You know, not much sympathy for Natalya. But I like the idea of the two of them
that was weird.
Teaming up for a while before they eventually break up and, you know, feud. Because, I mean, if they're able to build her up, all of a sudden you have, like, a great feud between Baszler and Ronda.
Yes, and that's what I was thinking of. I mean, the passing comment of, oh, they make a good pair by the announcers. I don't know which one it was, but probably Cole. And it's like, okay, you know, are they going to elevate or be in the tag team scene? But if that's the case, as often happens, as we talked about in our Mega Powers conversation, what's going to happen with Bloodline, you know, tag teams often break up and feud. So the elevation of Shayna Baszler is one of the what's the phrase? It's like there's untapped potential. It's waiting to be done. And I think owning and acknowledging that she was a big deal in NXT, something went wrong, but we can explain it, and she can get that spark back by being reminded of by working with Ronda of who she once was. You're giving the viewers that story to believe in, that rationalization of why somebody who wasn't portrayed all that seriously, or certainly not at a top level, on the main roster under Vince McMahon, why we now have a story that we can buy into to get her back to where we think she should be. And yeah, the association with Ronda and Baszler is natural and sort of obvious if they still believe in Baszler, and they do, and they ought to. Anything
yeah,
else?
And didn't they? Yeah, and didn't because I saw reported that they talked about planning more long-term plans, and this kind of feels like that might be, you know, that this might be something like that. Other thing we usually and when you know we've been talking like you know really well about the Bloodline, the little things that they do, the little, you know, character moments that they each have when skits are happening. I got to give props to Kaiser, because the way that he took the mic away from Kyle Braxton and then, you know, to pass it on to Gunther during the interview in the back, and the look on his face, yeah. Like, you know, he was so disgusted that he had to lower himself to deal with the help.
Totally.
I mean, beautiful.
I agree. Those little things make a big difference. You know, they can work for or against how much you enjoy a wrestling show. And when that detail is there, and there's, you know, when you note it, it's you know, what Jabba the Hutt's handler, you know, when he mourned, whatever, you know, like it was just like, oh, that's a little touch in the background. It's not essential to the plot, but it's how someone would naturally react. And it added a little something. And this just like legitimately adds to the demeanor of, you know, those two guys are going to be important for WWE and for Gunther and for their faction. And you want them to have some personality. And, you know, he is the, you know, the bigger character of the two in the tag team.
I will wait, Wade.
Yes. So, Javier, anything else for us?
Yeah, your Star Wars reference was the guy who was crying when the Rancor died.
Yeah.
His name is Malakili. I'm okay. Too much of a nerd. but you're right. Those are the moments, you know, where it's like it adds to. People know what's going on in the scene. People who know who their character is That actually is the reason I like Impact a lot, is that everybody goes in there and creates their own character, and they know how their characters are going to react to a given situation, which is, you know, when everything seems like everything's firing on all cylinders, because then, you know, you do those little things. You know that your character, if he's smug, you know, how he's going to react to a specific other character that he thinks that he that's lower
yeah.
than them. Full-blown storyline.
And it gives you more of a reason to root against them, because people don't like people like that.
Yeah, well, and the thing is that's one of the downsides of actually scripting, is because, you know, people who are writing, they're just writing for the scene. They're not writing for the characters. And, you know, so you need to have, I mean,
yeah.
scripting is good, but you also have to let, you know, the people ad lib, and, you know, because they're the ones who know the characters. You can't, you know, force them to be, beholden just to the printed word. You know, you got to give them, you know, some wiggle room.
Yep. Very good. Anything else out here?
This actually was LA Knight's second match. He had wrestled Mansoor.
Oh yeah,
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yep, yep. How easily we forget. But no, that yep. And this was a good second match for him. But they're working their way up the card. Although the fact that he cheated to beat Ricochet means maybe we're not done with that.
Yeah, yeah, and more. I don't know. I mean, do you think? I mean, is Ricochet just going to be essentially there in order to do the flashy? Is that like his spot pretty much on the card, just to be the flashy wrestler in matches to get other people over at this point, or do you think that he has another run, or they might do something else with him?
I just think they've tried with him, and his personality just isn't compatible with a push the way WWE, you know, looks for. I mean, he's not the type of person who is going to be higher on the card, other than what you just described, if he can't convey emotions and be, I mean, he seems like he'd be this cool dude, but then when he talks, you know, his execution of the scripts he's given it's not cool. It's not good. I think they've tried. It's just not his thing. So I think this is a good spot for him. I mean, if you're going to work for WWE, this is where someone with Ricochet's assets and deficits is going to land. And yeah, I would be surprised if he gets rehabbed anytime soon. I mean, sometimes people just stick around long enough that they decide to, you know, try to reboot them, but it's still going to be the same Ricochet who can't cut, you know, anything better than at best a decent promo. And they're going to look around for anybody else other than him to push and give TV time to at a higher level. And he'll be the backup plan, because they need people who can convey to pull people in on their promos better than he does. What do you think, Derek?
He used to be one of my favorite wrestlers to watch, but I mean, he's kind of slotted as just a guy, which is not the worst thing. I mean, if that's his spot on the roster, I mean, he's making good money. He's spotlighted every few weeks on national television. There's worse things in life. I mean, he's not just, you know, portrayed as a complete loser or anything. He's a guy fans get behind. It's not the worst thing in the world, but he's not going to be in that top tier. I don't think they have that cut out for him, but he can visit main events still.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
I agree. Javier, anything else?
Do you think any chance that, because some people like find themselves when they become a heel or vice versa? Do you think that he might have like a heel run? Because I remember he did heel in the Indies for a little bit, where he was like playing like Prince character. I didn't see much of that version of him. The little bit I did see, I'm like, oh, you know, there's a little bit of something here. But do you think that that might be a good change for him, where he's like not really being himself, but like playing another character? Because it seems like that actually helps Alexa Bliss, because Alexa Bliss is one where she's just being herself. She's kind of not really connected to what's going on, and she likes being something else, like when she played the Goddess or Evil Bliss. Do you think that might be something that might be worth trying with Ricochet?
I think the conundrum is similar and maybe even more so than with Seth, which is the ring style is babyface, the personality is heel. Yeah. And so Ricochet, it's just such a dazzling ring style. If you erase that, because he's going to get cheered for doing the dazzling athletic high spots, he's going to get cheered for those. And, I mean, he could do them and then just be, like, really cocky about it. But even so, people are going to just – they're not going to want to boo somebody who's that athletically gifted. So it's going to be an uphill battle. And it's like with Seth, you know, it's like people love his work in the ring. It always worked against him as a heel because he wouldn't cut out the dives. He's got, you know, that was his rep back in NXT. I got to get my spots in. And people, you know, elder minds in NXT tried to talk him out of it and going, if you're trying to be a heel, you're doing a disservice to the babyface by getting all your spots in. There's other ways to make money in this business. And he just, you know, never switched. He just wants to have the most stars. He wants to have the most pops. And so I think if you strip that away from Ricochet, I don't know if there's enough left where that's the person they want to invest in as a heel, especially if his, even if his mannerisms are good, if his promos are not good as a heel and you strip away his athleticism, it's not, can you make it work? It's, are they going to look around and find somebody better for that role? And I think they'd look around and probably find somebody better and then decide we just want our mid-card high-spot artist who can give us a good TV match and win now and then, but mostly be a gatekeeper. What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, if you take away his flashy moves and everything, I mean, that's his whole act. I don't see what you have left. He's a natural babyface just because of his mannerisms and because of the high-flying moves. So I think it would just get worse if he were to turn babyface and have like a just kind of like a phony heel character where he looks like he's playing a bad guy. I don't see how that benefits him. Although I think what Javier was referencing was his Lucha Underground run where he had the mask. Was it Prince Puma or something like that?
I think it might have been during Defiant when he was wrestling for Defiant. I think he had a run where he was playing. He was kind of playing off of the fact that he was Prince Puma, but like he was more like, you know, being just a cocky heel kind of guy.
Gotcha. Okay. How did he do during that run? Was he any good at playing?
I saw so little of it. I think I might have seen like one promo, and I'm like, oh, you know, this is an interesting take on the character. So that's what I was asking. Is like, you know, but because he wasn't like. He was, you know, like, you know, buying into like, you know, I'm God's gift, pretty much what Ospreay is doing now. I'm God's gift to wrestling.
Okay.
You know, kind of thing. So I thought that maybe doing that and, you know, you keep the flashy moves for a bit eventually and then, you know, but at least show some personality and then you can turn him, you know, after that. But
I think if he did that, he'd have to work against people who were really good athletes too. And so Seth, the baby face, do you have a heel Ricochet come in and sort of play the Will Ospreay role on Twitter to Seth's Twitter personality? Like, you know, I'm the WWE babyface. I represent WWE and, you know, whatever. I don't know. I mean, you can design the promos. But, I mean, I think for Ricochet as a heel to work, he would have to work with wrestlers who were really dynamic. And it would be – fans would be rooting for Seth instead of Ricochet, even though both would just have not – you know, just really good back and forth matches. So that's where it could work. But I just don't think it's like sustainable against a wide array of opponents than that. But I mean, it might, as I said, bring it on. I mean, if it can make Ricochet more interesting, I'm all for it, but they just have to be, you know, accounting for the inherent challenge of the fact that fans are going to chant, this is awesome, fight forever, you know, whatever. I mean, they're going to be into his in-ring work. And it's going to be an uphill battle for the babyface if they're trying to get heat on him, if he isn't willing to dial down the athleticism or at least find a way to make himself more obnoxious that people want to boo it.
Yeah,
anything else on here?
Last thing I had was something that Alex McDonald on the post-show alt perspective report. Heather, you know,
you mean the SmackDown alt report?
SmackDown.
We don't have an alternate post show. You said the post show alt report.
Okay.
There's not an alternate post show going on right now.
Or is there?
Did I say report, the alternate report? Or did I say alternate post show?
You said post show alt report. So it was a little complete. It was a mix of a variety of things.
I couldn't find my notes. I wrote it down because I know I would screw it up.
Yeah.
But somehow got the raw notes. So yeah. He wrote that he's excited that this is obviously sarcastic that he's excited that Logan is bringing his equally douchey brother to Saudi Arabia, and I totally disagree with what he just said. Jay Paul is way more douchey than Logan Paul. I mean, by like magnitudes more. So just you know wanted to put that out there. That,
really?
So just want to make sure that you know that was on the record. But yeah, that's
I'm glad you put it on record. Yeah. All right, cool. Javier, do you want to stick around for an email?
Yeah, sure.
Or do you want to go?
Please be Zach, okay. Especially if it's Zach, because if it's Zach, it's awesome.
No, it's not Zach. It's Wade. Wade from New Zealand. How do you feel about Wade? How do you feel about New Zealand?
I like New Zealand. Seriously, the Lord of the Rings movies and the movies that shows they film there is like gorgeous.
Yeah. All right.
I was thinking the sheep herders, but okay.
And I asked you to stay because this is cool. Wade in the email opened up by going, "Hi, Wade and Darren and Javier and everyone else." Like he included you. So am I the only one who is finding that Rhonda has go away heat now? I used to find her dull and robotic, but now I find her dull and robotic and channel change inducing. Come to think of it, I'm finding the entire women's division difficult to watch during the Levesque era, which is surprising to me since the NXT women's division was so strong under his watch. And also, was Natalya supposed to be sympathetic? I was happy to see her get beaten down because I found her so obnoxious. That was a bit of a problem. Is Rhonda dull and obnoxious as a heel in a way that's channel change-inducing Javier? Or she... not dull and robotic, but just being herself, which is a turnoff to fans who don't want her to succeed. And she's good at rubbing in people's faces how good she is. Like is there a concern with what Wade is writing that's how Rhonda's going to come across?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the thing. It feels like people are like legitimately not liking her because I think that there's already an internal feeling that you want to dislike her. So I think just that coupled with the fact she's being she's also an awkward person. You can tell that she's obviously an awkward person. I think all that coalesces into like, I don't want to see her because it creates a visceral reaction in me. It doesn't for me. So I'm actually really, let me remove the really. I am actually enjoying her as a little bit as a heel. Now, they haven't done much with her, but I think that there is potential there, particularly if she's playing off of somebody else like Shayna Baszler. I think that she's strongest when she's playing off of other people than when she's actually interacting with the crowd. I don't think she knows how to interact with the crowd, but I think if you get her in moments where she's directly interacting with somebody else, I think she's actually – you might be able to – she'll be more comfortable in that role. I do think that if she doesn't, if they don't, really emphasize that, it does turn into go-away heat for a lot of people.
Darren, what do you think?
Javier brings up a good point. I mean, everybody's just not comfortable for just coming out there and doing interview segments in front of thousands of fans. I mean, that's something that sometimes takes years to perfect. So, and she's not quite hitting the mark, obviously. And I could see why she could rub people the wrong way for a number of reasons. Wade, the emailer just brought up. Now, me personally, I'm still intrigued with her persona on the show and everything, and it's particularly with her team up with Shayna now, so I'm willing to give it another chance. I'm looking forward to seeing where this leads, and I think it might just work itself out, so I'll give it a chance.
Wade also says, and I know this is a SmackDown show, but with Crown Jewel on tomorrow and with the discussion you were having with Sean about competition for Gunther, how do you feel about the idea of Bobby and Brock's match ending with Brock winning and having a post-match handshake show of respect? Then Gunther and Bobby could face off with Gunther winning and then Brock coming out to protect Bobby after a post-match beatdown or something similar. Your thoughts? So, yeah, I mean, and could Brock and Bobby fight to the point of mutual respect, and would it be emasculating for Bobby to go, you beat me, but let's shake hands? Because, you know, like, does that undercut what Bobby wants to portray going forward when Brock isn't around and Bobby's around on a weekly basis? Darren, you first.
Oh, I mean, who's to say that Bobby won't go over since he's the one that is staying? And Brock could absorb a loss. I mean, like, he lost at SmackDown and didn't diminish him one bit. So, I mean, I could see Bobby winning it. But either way, whichever guy's shaking hands, I don't think it would harm them. But then you could have Bobby Lashley against Gunther. I wouldn't mind seeing that one as well. That's something that you could build up. And they seem to really be getting behind Bobby Lashley, keeping him strong. So that's a potential big match coming up. And the way that they're building up the Intercontinental title, Cole made a reference to it as being like the workers' title or something like that. It's going to be a big deal, especially by the time WrestleMania rolls around, who can dethrone Gunther. So that could be a really big showcase match.
Javier, your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, because of the fact I had back when he was still the U.S. Champion, I was looking forward to hopefully seeing Lashley and Gunther at Survivor Series. Assuming, you know, this is before they said that they're not going to be doing the brand versus brand thing. So I was looking forward to that. So I like the idea of that. I would love the idea, but the thing is that Lesnar's not going to be around for, you know, like, you know, week to week, you know, where they just basically, cause I mean, you're in Saudi Arabia, so you don't have a crowd. I don't think you have a crowd that's going to really turn on a finish where they both have like this crazy knockout, you know, match. And they actually both knock each other out, and it's a double KO, and then the, you know, that leads to them teaming up together and like becoming like a Brothers of Destruction esque team that just, you know, becomes the next, you know, like a threat. The thing is that you would have to do week to week, you know, to really get them over like that, and I highly doubt that that's going to be in Brock Lesnar's schedule. But I do like that idea. On the primer, I wrote that I would like to actually see Bobby Lashley. And I think this is more to get Brock a win after having lost so many with Roman Reigns against Roman Reigns, and that he, you know, that this is going to be like a you know, building back up kind of win for Lesnar. But I'd actually like to see Lashley win, because that will elevate, you know, Lashley to, you know, be a, you know, I would say, like, if not Gunther, have him be the next baby face to go after Roman Reigns for, you know, like, the Survivor Series. Reigns is probably going to be in the, but have him be one of the baby faces that challenges Roman Reigns now before you get to whatever the WrestleMania plans are.
Is a win tomorrow essential for that to work?
It would help a lot, because here's a person that Reigns is, you know, here's Lashley beating Reigns as mortal enemy. And I mean, if you don't have, because I mean, that's the other thing, like, how long is Lashley going to be, how invested is Brock now that Vince is gone? You know, is he only going to be here for like a handful more matches? Is this going to be continuing for a while now, like it has been before? Because if it's going to be continuing for a while, yeah, you have to build him up if you're going to continue using him as a special attraction. But like, let's say he's going to do like this Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, and then that's it for Brock. Why not have Lashley go over? I know Lashley's older, not that he looks it. He's an older wrestler, you know, but, you know, have him do that win so you can make a credible Lashley to go up against Reigns for the next little bit.
Yeah. Darren, any thoughts on that?
No, not really.
Fair enough. Cool. Anything else, Darren, you want to bring up about SmackDown? I don't think we hit necessarily did we hit every match?
Check on those. I think we hit everything.
I think we did, yeah. Yeah, because they had a couple of video packages that AF some time. We talked about the MVP
right.
segment with Braun. We Oh, how about just Sami Zayn? We didn't talk about Sami. What'd you make of Sami's performance tonight?
I thought he had his line of the night for me was yelling after the Usos, "My dogs, my dogs."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he always gets something in. That was cracking me up.
He makes a good point, my dog, and then he turns to leave, and he's like, "My dogs."
So what's fascinating for me in that was actually Solo Sikoa, because I don't have experience. I missed the entire, like, whatever he did in NXT. I'm just fascinated because I don't know if he, like, because he's just standing there looking like, you know, essentially like Samoa Joe. This is what he's doing. He's standing there evoking the spirit of Samoa Joe, like a badass. And I don't know if it's just that he doesn't have the chops, or if it's just like this is exactly what he's supposed to be doing. So I just find it fascinating because I'm not aware. Like I since he's the silent guy, I don't know if he's actually like on the same level as whatever everybody else is doing. But I just find it fascinating that they're silent.
I wouldn't underestimate the intentionality rather than the default mode that his demeanor is in. I think he's deliberate in how he's coming across. I think he's capable of more. I think we've seen hints of that. Maybe it's got a low ceiling, but.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's a nice mystery for me because I don't know if he's like, it's like that episode of The Simpsons where, was it The Simpsons or was it Family Guy, where you know, the small Japanese guy not doing anything, and he's like, oh, he's going to do something good the moment we turn around. And I think that's where I'm at with him is like, you know, he's going to be, like, you know, this great promo or, you know, and a great, like, actor, you know, a great character like, you know, the rest of the Bloodline has been doing, or, you know, he's not. That's the thing. I like the idea. And I like not knowing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I agree with you. All right, cool. Javier, appreciate it. Thank you. I was good talking to you. And everyone check out his Crown Jewel preview at pwtorch.com. Thank you. And Darren, great having you on. Glad it worked out.
Glad to be here. I will see you.
We'll do this again next year.
Probably at this rate it will be next year though.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, let me know. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com, and we'll talk to you all next time.